Blog Talk Radio.
All right, folks, this is Rebel Rousing Bergeron.
And it's the tornado, Attorney Pentecal.
Hey, we have Psychic Tom with us for the beginning of the show.
All right, how about that? On time.
Awesome. All right, so we got upsets to talk about. We've got Tony's prediction. It came kind of.
We got that thing to talk about.
And Creed, yep, Creed the movie. Rocky stuff. So where do you want to start? Where is she?
Well, you tell me.
Your boy. There's another Tyson in charge of
division. Oh, my God.
Don't be safe of all time. Tyson Fury. I didn't see it, but I heard he did just as good a singing job as he did a fighting job.
The singing was more entertaining than the fighting.
I heard that, too. So, did you actually get to watch it, Tony?
I didn't get home until about the fourth round, and then I put it on, and I pretty much tuned out by the seventh round.
It was that bad, huh?
Wow.
Yeah, Klitschko didn't do much, and Fury really turned it into a boxing match. I said, when you get two Goliaths with a small guy, the small guy is like 6'6". And, 250 pounds. And they're basically, like, waltzing around the ring. Not good.
Right. Yeah, it's too bad because, you know, you think it would take a Herculean effort to really beat a guy like Klitschko, and it would be more entertaining, but apparently not.
You know, Rich, maybe it was one of those circumstances where a fighter just gets old overnight. Now, I'm not saying that for sure until we see the rematch. But most of the time, you know, let's take Ali, for example. After that third Frazier fight, he was never the same. But we've seen, like, a gradual unwinding. If you go back and watch that Jimmy Young fight, you can make a case for Jimmy Young. And I think he'd have had an easier time with Ernie Shavers prior to that third Frazier fight. But by 78, it was really going in reverse gear for him. But you could see this gradual, and most of the time you see that. I mean, I can use many other examples. I'm sure you guys have a lot of them that you're coming to your mind about that. But sometimes it just happens overnight. Now, I don't know, but everything, I didn't see it live, but I did get the follow-ups. And it just seemed like Klitschko was just showing all the symptoms of an old, old, old man. The mind was willing, the body wasn't. Just a day late and a dollar short. And I'll tell you what, Tony, if you turned it out off in the seventh round, good God. I mean, I'm speechless. I mean, that says volumes about the performance or lack thereof from Klitschko. And I understand that after the 10th round, his corner was frantic, just trying to pump him up, screaming, we need the knockout. But just like a lot of fighters that get old, it's not there. So I don't know. I mean, I'll withhold judgment till the rematch comes, but if it was just bad of a performance, you wonder what's going to be different next time.
Right. Well, another Tyson also got a win on Saturday, but there's a guy named Tyson Cave, and he's a lot lighter. He's a super bantamweight. Up there in Nova Scotia, they had a card. He goes to 27-3 against Walter Rojas, who's 24-7-1. He got a TKO in the second round. But the reason why I mentioned that card is the second fight listed. Alexander Teslenko, at heavyweight, he's only 1-0, fought Travis Fulton, a guy that's got probably one of the most decorated. Well, not decorated.
My God, he's still fighting. I mean, he's got to be, and you remember him, Tony, the one time that you were hosting the show and Rich couldn't be on and I couldn't get through to you, and his name came up, and then I sent you the email about his record, and I know in MMA it was something like, you know, 180 wins, 120 losses. I don't know if it was that much, but and plus all the fight, he's got to be approaching 500 fights, I would think. Good God! How did he do on that card? By the way,
he actually lost by disqualification, so I'm thinking maybe he threw an elbow or something.
Oh, my God.
The second round, disqualification. Well, I don't know what happened there, but his boxing record is 22-39-1, so he's obviously set himself up as a boxing opponent. Also in Canada, up north, we had some other more interesting fights for titles. He had Elider Alvarez stay undefeated at light heavyweight against Isaac Chalimba, who has got two losses, two draws to go with his 24 wins. That one was for the WBC silver heavyweight title, and it was the majority decision win for Alvarez. The co-main event on that one was James DeGale, 21-1 at super middleweight, fighting Lucien Boutet, 32-2. Lost this fight for the IBF World Super Middleweight title. So James DeGale making a name for himself with that one. Big win for him. We also had a loss for Adrian Granados, who was 16-4-2. He was TKO'd in eighth by super lightweight Amir Imam, undefeated super lightweight there. He's 18-0. And then heavyweight Oscar Rivas stayed undefeated at 17-0 against a former guest of ours, Joey Abel, 31-8. He was KO'd in the second round.
I didn't even know Joey Abel was still fighting. You know, I see him fight in Philly a few times and then kind of disappeared.
Yeah. Well, maybe he took some time off and came back. I don't know. I haven't checked his record out. So that was last week's stuff mostly. We still gotta go see what else was on the Klitschko card. But we also had stuff before that, of course. We had Tony's prediction of who was going to win come true. It wasn't the round, but it was unanimous. He was unanimous. So he definitely got the right winner. In the Miguel Cotto versus
Canelo Alvarez. I didn't get to see it, but they could have boxed more. I thought, he would try to step it up a little bit, but the scorecards, were not close. I know a lot of people thought it was closer than it was, judged.
Right. Actually, according to this, there really wasn't much else on the Klitschko card. Nobody really that anybody on this broadcast would probably recognize for names. So I guess we'll skip that. But then another one I thought was kind of interesting happened over last weekend. Peter Graham, who I'm pretty sure was in Bellator, mixed martial arts, fought over in China against a guy named Alphonse Chumiatumbo for the WBO Asia Pacific heavyweight title. Peter is 9-3-1 in boxing. I'm pretty sure his record is fairly similar in MMA if it's the same guy. But he got the TKO in round 4 over Alphonse, so he's got now the WBO Asia Pacific heavyweight title. Just thought I'd mention that. I know he does kickboxing stuff, too. I think I've seen him in Glory, so it would make sense. If that's him. And, of course, we've got stuff coming up this weekend. The big boxing match this weekend is going to be Peter Quillen versus Daniel Jacobs. That's the big premier boxing champion.
That should be a good fight. You know, you got hometown rivals on there, and two world champions, two quality fighters. I am a Danny Jacobs fan. The way he beat cancer. The man is in his deathbed basically, and he said, "I'm not going out, and I'm coming. I'm going to survive this, and I'm going to fight again." And he did. So for that, you got to take your hat off the guy. You got to give him all the respect in the world. But when it comes down, to the fight, I think you got to favor Quillen in this one.
Yeah. Well, let me just get to the records here in a second. Well, we don't have the records, of course. We have the records, not the knockouts, right? Boxrec sucks. Also, the WBO Oriental Heavyweight title is on the line in New Zealand this weekend. Joseph Parker, 16-0 against Daniel Martz there, 14-2-1. I guess they're counting New Zealand and Australia as Oriental now. Bear with me here. Trying to find this. Much stuff going on in the UK. Daniel Jacobs has 30 wins, one loss, and Quillen is 32-0-1. This is for the WBA World Middleweight title in this one. It is from Brooklyn at the Barclays Center. And the co-main event is a featherweight bout for the WBA World Featherweight title. And it's a Jesus fight of the week. Jesus Marcelo Andres Queller, 27-1, fighting Jonathan Okwundo, who's 26-4. Be tough to find a bigger Jesus fight this week. We also have a former guest on this broadcast, this event, Will Rosinski, 19-2. He was the guy we interviewed last year before the NYPD-FDNY match.
Yeah, I remember that.
And he's fighting Joe Smith Jr., who's 19-1. It's a very similar record here at light heavyweight, 19-2 versus 19-1. And it's a 10-rounder, so good luck to Will on that one. We'll be pulling for him. And then another guy that's big in the New York area, Yuri Foreman, 32-2, coming back after a long layoff from the sport. He's going to be fighting Lenwood Dozier. He's probably going to...
Did he fight after that Cotto fight?
After that Cotto? I don't think so. I don't think so.
Yeah, because that was a fight, you know, I mean, he looked damaged good. I mean... He was in there hobbling. I mean, you could tell he was really having a lot of knee trouble in there. And Cotto was battering him pretty bad. And that was a fight where Arthur McKinney Jr. as a referee really took a lot of flack for it because Foreman's corner tried to stop the fight. And he basically, they threw the towel in and he basically ignored it. And said, only I can stop the fight. And they're like, we won't stop. Our guy is hurt. And then like a couple seconds later, could have knocked me down again and stopped it. And I was like, let the corner surrender for a guy who was obviously too brave to, you know, surrender for himself.
Right. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, it was.
Another former guest, too, Heather Hardy, undefeated at 14-0 at Super Bantamweight. She's going to be fighting Mimi Bosquez, who's 10-3-2. She's a Gleason's girl, Heather. We're always putting out stuff from Gleason's about her and other stuff there, so... Definitely pulling for her there. And then finally, we've got Chris Algieri at welterweight, 20 wins, 2 losses, fighting Eric Bonet, who is 16-2. So we'll be watching for that one. And we got some other stuff around the world going on. Let's see what else we got here. Good stuff. Over in Kissimmee, Florida, we have a big fight. On Saturday, Alexander Brand in the main event at light heavyweight, 24-1, fighting Medzid Bektemirov, nicknamed B-52. He is 16-0 at light heavyweight, so it's a little bit of a test for him against a guy with a little bit more experience. Then we've got featherweights, Wilfredo Vasquez Jr. He is 24-5-1, fighting Rafael Rivera. Who is 20 wins, 0 losses, 2 draws. And that's for the vacant WBC Fiekerbach featherweight title. And Dionisio Miranda is also on this card. He's 22-13-2 at super middleweight, fighting Luis Arias, who is 13-0. Don't ask me what the KOs are. I don't know. Also, Dusty Hernandez Harrison is on this card. He's 28-0. I just published a blog today with his new opponent on there. I guess his former opponent had to withdraw due to an injury of some sort. So I don't have the name right offhand. But if you check our blog or you really want to know, you'll find it. Let's see what else we got. Over in the UK, we've got some interesting fights going on this weekend. Danny McDermott, Stevie Quinn Jr., Michael Kelly all fighting PBA in Northern Ireland. Let's see. At York Hall in London, we have a pretty decent card. We've got John O'Donnell versus Jan Baylog. This is a mismatch of the week. John O'Donnell, he's 29-2 at welterweight. Baylog is 9-26-1. That's not a very fair matchup. The main event is Ali Adams, 14-4-1 at heavyweight, fighting Dominic Akinlade, who is 4-0-1. And there's a lot of crazy on-paper mismatches on that. Go through all those. Over in Switzerland, there's an interesting fight here between Arnold Djurdjevic, who is 28-0 at heavyweight, fighting Marino Gomez, who is 20-4. That's an 8-rounder. One of only two fights on that whole card. I guess they don't fight over there much. Let's see. We talked about Joseph Parker. I know there's some big fights in Germany. Just trying to find them here. World Boxing Union super middleweight title is on the line in Hameln, Germany. Christian Pawlak, who is 25-8-1, will be fighting Rodolfo Magno, who's 15-2 there. But in Hamburg, this doesn't make any sense because they just had the Klitschko fight over there. They've got all these big names on this card a week later, and they got no big names on the Klitschko card. I don't know who messed that one up, but yeah, this is in Hamburg. Dennis Hogan and Jack Kolke are the main event fighters at super welterweight. Hogan is 22-0-1. Kolke is 20-1. It's for the interim WBA super welterweight title, 12-rounder. We also have Michael Stryer, 42-24. Fighting Adrian Granat, who's 9-0 at heavyweight. That's the co-main event. Then we've got Kubrat Pulev at heavyweight, 21-1, fighting Maurice Harris, 26-20-3. Now, if that's not enough, we've got another light heavyweight fight between Enrico Kohling, who's 19-1, and Sergey Demchenko, who is 15-8-1. So that's going on over in Germany. That's pretty much it for the BoxRec stuff for this week. Good stuff, anyway. Sure, there's plenty of shit. So, anyway, we got a lot of other stuff going on. We had, of course, another UFC event go by over the weekend. I did not see it because... same reason why I didn't see the Klitschko fight. I was at my 20th high school reunion, which was a smashing success. Actually, just about all the big-time wrestlers on the wrestling team that year were there, and I hadn't seen most of those guys in literally 20 years. So it was kind of fun to reminisce about that and then tell the guys all the stories I tell on the radio show here about And I had totally forgot, you know, the story I always tell about the guy who I had to drink a gallon of water to face because I had to bump up to 189 pounds.
Right.
I had totally forgot the whole reason that was is because our 189-pounder had gone on vacation to Florida that week. So So here I am. I see the kid that he was supposed to fight this guy at the event, and I'm talking about that story. And he said, "Oh yeah, I remember that. That was the big Weymouth match, and I begged my mom not to take us that week to Florida." Oh geez, I totally forgot about that. What's your fault? totally blew my mind. But then the other thing was, I'm looking at our record that year. I totally forgot that we only lost two meets that year. And that was one of them. And it was like both meets were by less than a pin, 3 or 4 points. Unbelievable stuff. Also found out, you know, we have a Quincy versus North Quincy rivalry in that school system. It's been going on for years. And long before I went there, obviously it will be long before after I've gone there. So two of our Quincy wrestlers who were on the varsity team my year have now gone and started coaching at North Quincy. So we were all talking about how they're a bunch of traitors. But it was good. I probably had the least gray hair out of all my friends. I was impressed with that. That was fun. Yeah, there were a lot of people there, too. It was like 70 people showed up. So that was kind of a surprise. But other than that, yeah, I got to miss a pretty cool thing, though, according to what I read about the UFC Fight Night 79. You know, I've been talking about this Reebok deal and how a lot of these fighters will, at the end of their contract, walk away from the UFC because of that and probably some other reasons. And now, here we have a guy, Benson Henderson, who really had his career made by the UFC, put his wrestling shoes down, his fighting shoes down in the middle of the cage the other night and basically said, I'm going to look for greener pastures after getting a split decision win over Jorge Masvidal over there in Seoul, South Korea. And already one of the Korean organizations is trying to sign him. So I guess he made a good impression over there in Korea. But Jorge, 29-10, was no slouch there. He ended up getting a split decision. Benson did over him. He improves to 23-5. And from what I read, it was a very entertaining fight. Tough scrap for Benson. But he does say, actually, he wants to retire in the UFC. But he also wants to compete in multiple weight classes. And he wants to really make the most out of his career in the next few years. So all this stuff with the UFC's restrictions and their sponsor deals and stuff like that, you know, it's like a perfect storm for some of these fighters where they're starting to realize, you know, they only have limited time left. They only have limited time period for their careers. You know, they're starting to look at some of these health studies that are coming out on longevity and all that. So, of course, they're going to be thinking, all right, you know, when my contract's up, I need to look around. And unfortunately for the UFC, nowadays there's a lot more companies who can say, all right, I can offer you something better. You know, just to have that one or two stars, you know, group of stars that, you know, make that league special. So Benson might be the biggest fish in his pond, but he's going to get paid better than being the smaller fish in a bigger pond. So I encourage it. You know, I'd like to see more of it. I don't know if you really want to get back in the UFC, if that's the thing you're going to want to do. I don't know if other people who do want to get back in the UFC should take that strategy and run with it. But Benson is kind of his own dude. I mean, he's a different character. So I don't think it ever entered his mind, I shouldn't do this. Just did it. And whether he retires in the UFC or not, I don't know. I don't know if it really matters as long as he is able to take care of himself and his family and retire in good health. But it's certainly a statement, and it's not something we've seen a lot of fighters make. You know, we did talk a couple weeks ago about Brendan Schaub saying he would never come back to fight again. We haven't had a situation like this where a guy is actively fighting in his last fight and sends a message like that. That's a pretty big deal. But anyway, we also have another Bellator event coming up, 147, tomorrow night. But before we go through that, let's just quickly go through the other results from UFC Fight Night 79. Of course, there was a lot of Asian fighters on this card. Co-main event was Dong Kyun Kim, also known as the Stun Gun, beating Dominic Waters in the very first round, 3-11 into it, by TKO. Some punches. And we've got the co-main event, Alberto Mina versus Yoshihiro Akiyama. Just won by split decision there. We had Duho Choi beating Sam Cecilia by knockout at the 133 mark of the first round. Also punches. Dong Yi Yang beat Jake Collier by TKO from punches in the second round, a minute and 50 seconds into that one. Mike De La Torre beat Yui Chul Nam by split decision. Tae Hyun Bang beat Leo Kuntz by split decision. So-hee Ham beat Courtney Casey by unanimous decision. And we have Freddie Serrano beat Zhuku Yao by TKO from an arm injury in the first round, 44 seconds in. Second fight of the night, Marco Beltran won Yu Ning by split decision. And the first fight of the night, Dominique Steele beat Dong Hyun Kim. What, there's two Dong Hyun Kims on the same card? Wow, spelled exactly the same, too. But Dong Hyun Kim in the first fight did not do as well as Dong Hyun Kim in the last fight, because he got KO slammed in the third round, 27 seconds in by Dominique Steele. That's funny. I guess it's a really small world. So that does it for that one. And we've got Bellator 147. Josh the Punk Thompson headlining that one against a guy named Villasica. Let's wait for that one to load up here. Just a second. Okay, Pablo Villasica, he's 10-1, and Josh Thompson is 21-8. We also have Daniel Weichel, 35-9, fighting Georgi Karakinian, 24-4-1. Weichel is 35-9. Pitbull's brother, Patricky Friere, is 14-6. He will be fighting Derek Anderson, who's 12-2. We got Brian Rogers, 11-8, fighting Virgil Zwicker, who is 14-4-1. Adam Piccolitti, 6-0, fighting Mario Soto, who's 6-1. Usman Thomas Diagne, 5-4, with one draw, fighting Eric Sanchez, who's 5-2. And then we got James Terry, 16-8, fighting Mauricio Alonso, 10-7. And the first fight of the night, AJ McKee, 2-0, fighting John Donaldson, who is 1-0. And I was thinking McKee is not a very common name, and you know, his first initial is A, so probably related to Antonio McKee, I would think. That's been around the MMA landscape for quite a while. All right, so also during our break, there was some news about a former boxing champ who was killed. I don't know if you saw any of that, Tony. O'Neill Bell was killed in a robbery.
Yeah, I knew about that. I saw a post online, and then I didn't get it because I was at work that day. And I saw a post online. I was like, oh, shit. And then I was going to look at it more. And then by the time I got home, I totally forgot. That's terrible.
Yeah, he was mugged and killed, and it was November 25th. He was 41 years old. He was robbed when he was getting off a bus on November 25th, day before Thanksgiving, right? That sucks. And they killed him, and he arrested an 18-year-old man.
Horrible.
And then they arrested an 18-year-old guy, and another guy was arrested also in connection with an East Point robbery in Atlanta that was that went down prior to the murder. But they're also looking for two more suspects. So I don't know, they don't mention whether the other two have any connection to this whole thing. But yeah, he was pretty big dude for a while. He talented fighter. 41 years old. I mean, that's pretty young, even for a guy who's been in the ring as long as O'Neal was. Obviously, had a lot of years left, and you know, it's unfortunate for the guy who murdered him and for the guy who got murdered, because you know, both of their lives are ruined. Here's a pretty interesting story. Okay, everybody knows who Chris Christie is, right? And if you don't know, he's the governor of New Jersey. And he has pretty poor poll numbers right now. So I don't know whether this has anything to do with that or what he's thinking. Maybe he's doing the testosterone booster like I am. But from what this says, I don't know. I think it might be a mental condition, because Chris Christie is saying he can beat Vladimir Putin in a boxing match.
Sure.
What,
like Rock and Talking Robots?
Against anyone in a box.
Yeah.
Oh, but some of the comments on this story are pretty priceless. And obviously, Vladimir Putin has some fighting training. Judo. He's a big judo player. So, one guy says, the secret to fighting a fat guy? Move in, then run. Taunt, move in, then run. Taunt, move in, then run. In less than 50 seconds, the opponent will be so tired they cannot stand up straight.
Yeah, you know what? It's funny you say that, because I remember one time I was going to fight in Chippensburg, and I got there, stepped on the scale, I was 178. I was supposed to be fighting at 190. And I was already below what I was supposed to be, because my opponent was going to be around like 188. I didn't care, you know. Didn't bother me none. I'd already fought two fights at heavyweight a month prior. So I get there at 178. My opponent has the flu, so he doesn't make the trip. Now, there was a kid on Chippensburg that was about 180 pounds. We were literally within like 3 pounds of each other. And he had a few fights. You know, he won one or two. He lost one or two. Didn't have my experience. I was a third-year fighter, and that was the first year I went to the Nationals a few weeks later. So I'm sitting there thinking, okay, they're probably going to put this kid in there with me. And they come up and they offer this fight. They're like, yeah, we only got one guy for you. And I'm waiting for them to say, like, Rayburn or whatever his name was. They're like, only guy we got for you is our big, dopey heavyweight. And I was like, Roman? They're like, yeah. I said, what did he weigh today? And they're trying to downplay it. They're like, 265. Yeah. As you might be able to guess, that would be about 80-some pounds difference, like 83 pounds or something like that, or 87 pounds. I don't know the math off the top of my head. And I was like, and then the guy was trying to set up the fight. He was like, listen, you know, he gets so winded so quick. You dance around him for 30 seconds, he'll be exhausted. I said, that's not what I'm worried about. What I'm worried about is, what if he falls?
Right.
You know, when he falls on me. And then I was like, you know what? I was about to take the fight. I was like, fuck it, I'll take it. You know, I don't care. I didn't care anymore. And then our coach stepped in. He goes, you know what? He goes, we've taken fights where when I was a freshman and I was fighting seniors, you know, that they put in at the last minute. But, like, if you're not going to reciprocate that favor back to us, you know, like, we took fights where we were the underdog. You know, we're not going in there with a guy that's going to outweigh him by 70-some pounds or 80-some pounds. That's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
I would have done it, you know. I mean, you got to say something for insanity.
Right.
And the thing is, I would have won.
Well, another commenter says, if Christie sat on Vlad, it might be tragic. Else, I don't see it.
Yeah, very true.
Putin. Another guy mentioned, if you are fat and fighting another fat guy, then I recommend a video camera because I want to see it. That's a good one. All right. So some other stories we got through the week. There's an interesting one. You've heard the mantra or the old saying, if you can't beat them, join them, right? You guys have both heard that? Oh. Tom.
Yeah, there we go. No, I'm just having this visual of Putin trying to give Christie a hip toss with his judo. And I don't know. And in my mind, to show how sick I am, Christie's in Speedos. Okay. And then imagine crashing into the canvas, okay? Imagine, whether it's a ring or a cage, it wouldn't matter if the floor could hold him. I mean, he's got to be 3.5 bills, I would guess. My God, he's waddling.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I understand Putin's has a lot of experience with judo, but he would need every technique. I mean, I know judo is based on leverage, and I tried a little bit of it. I really sucked at it, but it takes a ton of work to be proficient. But to toss Chris Christie would be, well, I'll tell you what, you think that wouldn't break some pay-per-view records? What do you guys think?
In addition to the thing?
It would definitely, be an event that would be spoken about for a long time.
All right, so... Guys, I know I've heard this saying, if you can't beat him, join him, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, this guy said, if you can't beat him, kill him.
Oh, shit.
This is a crazy story. I've never heard of anything like this. This is a true story. A boxer named Daryl Chelizny allegedly shot and killed champion fighter Stan Stanislas the same night they sparred one last time. A witness and the assailant, this guy, Daryl, tell us me, they told police, the witness and this guy, that the two boxers had fought at the gym for years. Stanislas was the Florida Golden Gloves champion in 2012, and he usually won their sparring matches. Of course, his career took off, and tell us me, the assailant, his career sputtered. So, again, on Thanksgiving, hours after he allegedly killed Stanislas, investigators say Telesme admitted that he believed Stanislas was holding him back. And this guy, Stanislas, had several championship titles but refused to accept a formal challenge from Telesme, according to the Palm Beach Sheriff's Office. It happened in Palm Beach, Florida. Mr. Telesme felt he was missing his opportunity to advance in the boxing community. So he obviously held a grudge. And in the weeks before his death, Stanislas, the champion, had become so worried about this little feud that he even asked a friend if he could borrow a gun. And Telesme had a gun. He was known to carry one. So the two men and Stanislas' roommate, also a boxer, went out for drinks the night before Thanksgiving, and Telesme brought the gun. During the drunken revelry, tension boiled over. Both the roommate and Telesme told police. Stanislas said, I will kick your ass. I am a champion fighter. So the boxers fought, but Stanislas also used MMA techniques and wrestling moves. And, of course, he won again. So they got more drinks. And then, according to one of the investigators, throughout the remainder of the evening, both he and Mr. Stanislas continued to make offhand comments to each other about who was the better fighter, as well as other derogatory remarks. They eventually parted ways, but Telesme left his gun in Stanislas' car. At some point before 4:15 a.m., he allegedly retrieved the gun from the car. It's detail that police noted in charging Telesme with first-degree or premeditated murder. As an SUV with an unknown driver waited nearby, Telesme allegedly knocked on Stanislas' door. The roommate told police he looked out the window, saw Telesme, and said to him, the fight is over, it's squashed. Come out, Telesme allegedly said repeatedly. Stanislas was suspicious, according to the roommate. He told Telesme to lift his shirt, and it's not clear if he could see the gun, but he opened the door, and Telesme shot him once in the head.
Holy shit.
So a few hours later, a friend of Talisman called the police and told them that Talisman was waiting to be taken into custody. Of course, Talisman's defense is the night was an alcohol-fueled blur, and he told police where they could find the gun and the clothes he wore while firing the shot. So looks like he's going to be charged, well, he already is charged, with first-degree murder with a firearm, and he's being held without bail. So talk about taking a rivalry too seriously.
Yeah, no shit.
Yeah, no matter how bad it is, you know, with your sparring partner, you don't bring a gun to a fist fight. another guy getting in trouble with the law, boxer, Jermaine Taylor. We've
talked
about him. He's been in and out of the news, mostly in the news for some stupid shit he's been involved in. Tuesday, instead of fighting all this stuff, he decided that he's going to enter guilty pleas for all of it. Three separate cases, and he's going to face sentencing in April 2016. And the indications are that a lot of this is being blamed on drugs. So I guess he's seen some psychiatrists, and they're recommending that in lieu of any jail time that he receives some kind of treatment. So maybe that's part of this whole plea deal, that he's going to get some treatment. But he pleaded guilty to 9 counts. Each a D-class felony under Arkansas law. Each count will be punishable by 0 to 6 years in prison as well. And the amendments to the original charges were relatively minor, said a deputy prosecuting attorney. In January, of course, Taylor was arrested on suspicion of brandishing a pistol to threaten a family member during a Martin Luther King Jr. parade. And that's just the least of it. There was a little kid there, mother and father. I mean, it wasn't just... it's making it sound like it was his family member here. It was just a family, a whole family. I don't think it had anything to do with him. It was some kid that wanted to hold his title or something, and he pulled a gun out. This is some bullshit. And he was up that night, and I think they found some drugs on him in that case. But in July, he was also charged with battery for assaulting a man at a Little Rock Substance Abuse Treatment Center. Even when he goes to the treatment center, he starts fucked. But anyway, in exchange for his guilty plea, the state dropped a child endangerment enhancement count in the January incident and reduced in severity the charge arising from the July episode. Of course, Taylor offered repeated apologies for his behavior in recent years and also vowed to resume his career in the ring. On Tuesday, the state court judge allowed him to leave the state for training. So it doesn't look like they're going to jail him for too long if they're doing that kind of stuff. But he had a court-ordered examination. As I mentioned, a state psychiatrist testified in February that Taylor needed psychiatric care and should be monitored for substance abuse in lieu of incarceration. And he was scheduled to defend his title in April, but due to his legal and medical difficulties, the International Boxing Federation declared the middleweight championship vacant. That title was regained by Taylor in 2014 while he was free on bond and awaiting trial for the incident involving his cousin.
And that fight, when he won the title from Sam Salomon, was absolutely awful. You know, Salomon was gimpy in the fight. He got knocked out like 5 times. Every time Taylor touched him, the guy's knee would buckle and go down.
Right.
You know, talk about how one fight can wreck a career. That Kelly Pavlik fight, wow. I mean, Taylor was just never the same.
You're right. You know what, Tom? I got to find this for you because I think you'll appreciate it. When that fight happened in 2007, that was my first year with Fight News Unlimited, and that's when I first started doing a lot of the preview and prediction articles.
Uh-huh.
And that was, you know, one of the earlier ones that I did. And I picked Pavlik by stoppage. And I took a lot of flack for that. People said I was, you know, not, I didn't know what I was talking about. Taylor was going to tear him up. I was, underestimating, but basically disrespecting her. And I had come out and said on there, first of all, I thought the first Bernard Hopkins fight ruined him. Because if you go back and you watch that fight over and talk up a lead early, like Hopkins would struggle with his style. You know, Taylor had a style that was always going to trouble Hopkins for whatever reason. And he built up a lead, and Hopkins started coming back, and he buckled it at one point, with a pretty good shot. I think it was a grand maybe. And then got into the 12th round. He really took the kill in the 12th. And the one judge actually gave that round to Taylor, which ended up winning him the fight. And I couldn't see how that happened. I thought Hopkins won the first fight, but the second fight was a draw. But I think that then going into the Pavlov fight. And I think that ruined him really going forward.
Yeah.
Right. It's possible. Now, Tony, we understand you've been to the movies lately.
I have. I went last week. I went, the Axe was supposed to open on Wednesday. It opened on Tuesday up at one theater up by where I live. So I went to check it out. And I must say, I was floored how much I enjoyed it.
Wow.
You know, when they first, and I know you've heard me say this on the show, I auditioned for Rocky Balboa, and I ended up being an extra in it. You know, I got cut, but I was on the set a couple days. And when the chance for this one came out, I wasn't sure, and I was very skeptical. And I sent in, a picture to Huey Casting when they were asking for background boxers, knowing that there was no way I was going to get it, And they even responded to me, and they're like, because I had sent them a photo, like a fight photo, and they're like, how old is this photo? And, as soon as I said that, I'm like, I'm not getting this. But I was like, fuck it. Send it in anyway. Never heard back from them. Didn't really care. I said, especially when they said they were going to make this Apollo's son. I'm like, how are they going to pull that off? That sounds ridiculous. He's going to be too old. But the way they set up the storyline, I was impressed. I was impressed with, without, and I don't want to give away any spoilers here. The way they set it up and, his early life. And then how he ends up having, a successful life, but in his mind, unfulfilled. And then how, he goes to Philadelphia to find Rocky. And then it was very similar to the first Rocky movie from 76 because they really spent a lot of time building the characters. If you go and you watch the original Rocky movie, they spent time, obviously, building up Rocky. They spent time, you got to understand Mickey. You got to understand Adrian, as shy as she was, and because, her brother was abusive to her. You saw, you got to understand Paul's. And these were characters that had a lot of substance to them. They were characters that, you were interested in. That's what I felt this movie had, not just from, Adonis Johnson Creed, not just from obviously Rocky, who was the only character in the movie that was established going into this. There's no Paulie. Obviously, Adrian's passed away. And the only three characters that had been in all the movies going into this were Rocky, Paulie, and then Apollo's trainer, who became Rocky's trainer, Duke.
Mm-hmm.
The only mention of Duke is that his son is a trainer now.
Uh-huh.
But other than that, Rocky is the only character that you know. So you have to really build everything up from the ground up. You just can't go in like a sequel where you know everybody. And just, you pick it up. You got to build all these characters. And they did that. And they did that in some very poignant scenes. There's, scenes in there where Rocky's battling health issues and he's got to question his own mortality. There's scenes in there where there's a lot of self-doubt. you know, there's a scene, the scenes in there where, you know, the child is trying to get out of, you know, the shadow of his father, who he never knew. And, you know, sometimes that would set him off.
Right.
So when you see that, you're going to see a lot of scenes in there. You're going to say, wow, it reminds you of the first one, but set for a modern audience.
I did see, too, Tony, there was an article about this over the weekend or last couple of days. I didn't really read the whole thing, but, you know, it was kind of made me smile because you've been talking about how it just doesn't seem possible with the sun and the setup. But there was actually somebody who wrote a whole article about how it doesn't really add up. It might not be able to happen that way. And there's some inconsistencies. But it was more along the lines of this couldn't happen in today's boxing world. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And I was wondering if you'd agree with that after watching.
Well, you know what? The first Rocky movie, I don't think could happen in today's boxing world. Because it was like basically, okay, Apollo's going to have a fight, and his opponent pulls out. So it's like, okay, let's just give anybody a shot at the title. You know, now with all the sanctioning bodies and sanctioning fees and, you know, legality here, legality there, and promoters back and forth. That was looking like that now. That's a stretch.
Mm-hmm.
With this one, you know, obviously, you know, like I said, I don't want to give too much of it away. The antagonist, you know, the light heavyweight champion of the world, pretty Ricky Conley, played by Tony Bellew, you know, light heavyweight contender himself. You know, he's, you know, a very antagonistic fighter. He's got, like, you know, a real bad attitude. You know, he's a violent temper. So, you see stuff that he does at the press conference that you could see happen in a fight. And they, instead of, like, Apollo, where, you know, he's the best in the world and he's given a shot at a no-name, this guy is looking like his career may be over because he's going to jail. And he wants a big payday before he goes. And he's going to fight the one guy. They get in a scuffle at the press conference. He breaks the guy's jaw on a sucker punch. And now he's really in trouble. And it's like, well, we got to get one fight. And they find out this kid is Apollo's illegitimate son. They're like, yo, let's give this guy a shot. But it wasn't like, you know, he may have not been ranked, but he had experience. And he had just had a win over a ranked contender.
Mm-hmm.
So that at least he shows up to be a credible opponent, unlike Rocky in the first one, who was just basically a no-name ham and egg. You see him struggling, you know, with Spider Rico in the first scene of the movie, who was, you know, as Mickey called him, a bomb. So, yeah, was there more credence to this one as there was to the first one? I would say yes.
All right. Well, there you have it. Funny. Boxing Rain Man himself.
But I would say, if you get a chance, I'd like to go see it again. There were a lot of scenes in there. Like, the last scene, I'll admit it, man. I was in the theater, and I was about to get up and start cheering, you know, in the 11th round. I really was. But there were also some scenes in there that, you know, gave you a little bit of a lump in your throat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when Rocky was talking, and he's facing his diagnosis.
Right.
And, you know, he's facing his diagnosis and they're, you know, talking to him about it. And he's sitting there saying, you know, my life's pretty much past. I have nothing to live for. Wow, that's kind of hard to watch. Mm-hmm. And then the very last scene after the fight, it's at the Art Museum steps. And wow. I remember reading it. They said, you might want to have some tissues with you. And I didn't need them, but, you know, I did feel a lump.
All right. Well, I will definitely have to see it and share my thoughts on it maybe over this next week. It's slow. The firewood season usually slows down around this time. So everybody's trying to buy Christmas presents.
Yeah.
So, actually, we tried to do something different this year. We're going to do some Christmas decorations.
Ooh.
Somebody sent me a picture of the snowman that they did, and I was thinking of telling you about this, Tony, because you do the tree lot. So,
that's right.
This is a good idea. We're going to take pine trees. We're going to slice circles off the stumps, right? And we're going to connect three circles together and make snowmen. With a top hat hang out of birch bark, and it's all going to be wood. And I already saw a picture of it. It looked pretty cool. So we're going to do that and some reindeers for the Christmas decorations.
You know, anything you can do, it's a lot of times people like that stuff, and believe me, anything you can do to, you know, get any notoriety is a good thing.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, people remember me when I do these trees, and they said, I was there last Friday, Black Friday. I was there from 7 a.m. to 10 p.m., and I'll be there tomorrow, because usually we get our entire shipment on Black Friday. We have a new supplier this year, so they had done a partial drop-off on Wednesday, and then Friday we started really setting everything up. And, you know, people started showing up around, like, 10 a.m. I mean, we didn't have anything priced yet, and people were showing up. And I remember one couple came, and it was about the fifth or so year that they've been here. They're straight. And I remember when their son, who's, like, 5 or 6 now, was an infant in a stroller.
Wow.
And I was like, hey, good to see you guys again. And we're, you know, and they even, like, wrote a review on our Facebook page. They're like, we love coming here. There's not only do, you know, we get a great tree, but we're treated so well here. Because they remember us. They remember our kids. And, you know, and they know exactly what we want.
Right.
And they remember me, you know, maybe because I talk to them every year, but I always have a funny shirt on. And I always have a funny hat on. And I put a joke on my Facebook page. Joke was from the movie Office Space. And I said, like when they were running pieces of flair at the sports bar.
Yeah.
And I used the quote, and I said, people can buy a Christmas tree anywhere. They come to Mr. C's for the atmosphere and the attitude.
Mm-hmm.
And, but that's the idea. And the thing is, do I do this to help get tips? Hell yes.
Mm-hmm.
And if I have a $3 box of dog biscuits in my car, someone brings a dog, you give the dog a treat, a $3 box of biscuits, and I might get a couple $5 tips.
Right.
Hell yes. I'm actually sending you guys an email now with the shirt that I just bought last night for Larry.
Well, we'll check that out. And now, actually, I've got a guy that looks like Santa Claus, so I think we're going to work that out. And this guy hates Christmas, right? I showed him. He's working for me. He's 50-something years old. He's got the beard and everything. And so he's been doing cordwood with me, and I showed him the picture of the snowman things, and now he's, like, focused on it like you wouldn't believe, you know, because he knows it's slow. He knows he needs to make money. He hasn't been making a lot of money these last few days. So all he could think about is snowmen, and this guy is, like, so anti-Christmas. That's all he does is complain every time he hears a fucking Christmas song. He wants to sell them. He wants to dress up like Santa and sell them somewhere. So, wow.
You know what? Here's the thing. You know what? For a lot of people that are so anti, put the money in the pocket. Yeah. Some of the guys that I work with are very like, oh, yeah, and they're miserable. And I'm like, you know what? First of all, when you're in there, even if you don't like some of the people that show up, and believe me, we get a lot of people that are jerks that show up there and they bitch and they complain and they want to fight you on the price and all that. Here's the thing. You make a fake smile. Hey, people remember me because of the stupid hats I wear, and people remember me because I'm singing Christmas carols and I'm dancing, or I'm grabbing a broomstick and I'm singing Elvis Presley Blue Christmas into it. But at the same time, it's a show. It's all about the show.
Yeah.
And here's the thing, because some of the guys I work with, I'm one that's on, like, I wear a different shirt every day. I only work maybe 2 to 3 days a week. But I will wear a different Christmas shirt every day, whether it's Christmas Story, whether it's Darth Vader with a Christmas hat saying, I find your lack of cheer disturbing, whether it's chimpanzees wearing Christmas hats, or who needs mistletoe with a face like this, or Beavis and Butthead dressed as Santa and a reindeer. I don't care. You know, whether I'm wearing a Santa pimp hat or a Santa ride-em cowboy hat, you know, people remember that. And it's part of the show. And, like, so you get these other guys, and you want to sit there and they're just going to wear, like, you know, a pair of like Carhartts or whatever it is, and like work clothes and work boots. You know, you're not showing any passion.
Right.
And believe me, you're going to get dicks no matter where you go. But if you can show some passion, show some enthusiasm, show some spirit, you know what? You bring people back. And also, somebody that may have given you no tip may still give you no tip. Some people are like that. Some people may have given you $2, may give you $5. Some people may have given you $5, may give you $10. And you know what? Believe me, because I know.
Hmm. Well, I love the shirt. Merry Christmas.
Yeah, you send it to you guys. It's pretty awesome, ain't it?
It is. We're going to have to get one now. You got to tell me.
Yeah, I'll post the link on your Facebook page because I got in my suggested post yesterday. I'm like, oh, hell yes.
Nice. Well, I'll check it out. I'll have to get one. Maybe I'll wear it to Creed when I go to Creed.
You should. I was joking around. The only thing I said on my Facebook page is like, when I was going to Creed, I was like, boy, I wish I knew someone that had a replica of the Apollo Creed outfit, I'd wear it.
Uh-huh. Right.
And then people were like, don't you have one? Yeah, ass goblin. Why do you think I'm saying it?
Right. That's why it's funny.
Yeah. People are dumb.
Work on getting a guest next week. I thought we were going to have one this week, but I guess it's one of those holiday things. Everybody's still hungover.
Yeah. Hey, that's not a bad thing.
So, and next week, between now and the next show, I will also have the first blog about my pronabolone experience. It's still going pretty good. I didn't really do much of any workout the last week because I've been doing the reunion thing and the firewood and dealing with all kinds of traveling and back and forth stuff. But, you know, I'm still maintaining the weight. It's still really for your not immune system, but your metabolism.
Right.
I definitely think that's the number one benefit, other than the energy that you get from it, is the way it just totally changes your metabolism. I mean, I don't go a day now without a solid number two. So, yeah, I am definitely pleased with the results, and I haven't really even been taking full advantage of it, but you know, I think it definitely helped make me look nice and slim and trim at the reunion. Down to about $1.95 on a good day now, between 195 and 200 walking around weight, so it's not very far away from where I need to be.
Moving in the right direction. Okay.
Yeah. I don't think I'll go back.
I got to ask you, how do some of the pretty girls from your high school class look 20 years later?
Oh, that was another thing that I was surprised, you know, because I wasn't a ladies' man in high school at all. I was kind of the nerd, the geek, but, you know, I was also popular because I did a lot of stuff. So I dated and stuff, but I didn't date any of the real popular girls. And the reunion comes and I got all kinds of girls coming up to me, talking to me. I guess because everybody else got so fat.
Yeah, I went to my 10th and I noticed the difference.
Yeah.
My 10th one, and I haven't been back since, and I've got number 50 coming up in a couple of years. God, I can't even imagine that.
Well, we had a guy show up, ours. He thought we were in his class. He was from the class of 1965. And shows up, there's like three of us there, and he starts talking about the track team. And he said, who's your coach? Because I said, I did track. And I said, you know, the guy's name. Oh, no, that wasn't the coach. It was this guy. So I thought he was maybe a teacher for a second. And then we come to find out he had gone to the wrong place. It was supposed to be a 50th reunion. He showed up at the place. I felt so bad for him. At the same time, I was kind of offended. He, like, thought we were in his class. How old is this guy?
Oh, man.
Yeah, there were a lot of cool girls that I used to talk to, you know, briefly here and there that were, like, you know, coming up to me, talking to me for a while, and that was kind of flattering. There was one old girlfriend I was, like, trying not to bump into so much, and then I just kept seeing her, and we started talking. She brought me a couple of drinks. That was cool. Other than that, yeah, it was pretty much just hanging out with the wrestling team. All the guys that showed up. There was like six or seven guys on the varsity wrestling team that I hadn't seen in years that showed up. So that was cool. And one of the guys, actually, the guy that I should have wrestled at his weight, he was the captain. He told me about somebody that I've seen out here in Massachusetts called Chris Trietti, who's a boxer. I think he's a light heavyweight. And I've seen him. We had Ryan Kielczewski, who fights on some of the same cards on our show. But we never had Chris on, and he actually is promoting fights in addition to being in them now. In Massachusetts, in the Quincy area where I grew up, on the other side of Quincy where I grew up, but at a place called Marina Bay. So we're going to try to get him on the show to talk about all that stuff and, you know, all the common people we know out there in Quincy, as we call it, Quincy, even though it's spelled with a C. So, yeah, we'll have to get him on the show and have him talk a little bit about that and catch up with him. I have seen him fight at least two or three times now. The last time was Sexy when Hank Lundy was there, actually. Same night I met Johnny Ruiz for the first time. So definitely have some type of guest next week, whether it's Chris or somebody from the MMA world. And we'll go from there.
Okay.
Happy holidays, everybody. Don't eat too much and don't spend too much on Christmas presents. Buy some firewood.
Yeah, you might not buy it. Well, actually, that's a good investment, actually, because, you know, oil is expensive. Gas is expensive. You know, get some good fire heat going. That's always a good thing.
Oh, yeah. All right.
Guys, enjoy the fight
right,
this weekend. Got plenty of them. And also, one last thing. Glory is going to be replayed Sunday night at 8 o'clock on ESPN. So we'll check that out. So lots to talk about next week.
Yes, sir.
Sounds good. Hasta la vista, gentlemen.
Thanks for stopping by, everybody, and adios. Hasta la vista.